Okay.
Move on.
Okay, today I presented Cabinet with an update on the government's policy relating to the drug P. In that update, I noted the recommendations from Professor Gluckman in relation to the limiting the availability of pseudoephedrine, the main precursor chemical used in the manufacture of P. I also updated the Cabinet on the progress of the methamphetamine working group, which is being led out of my department. It is the advice of both Professor Gluckman and the working group that to be effective in cracking down on P, increased limitations on the availability of pseudoephedrine should be supported by a range of other interventions. Policy work on possible interventions is ongoing. I'll be bringing a comprehensive package of recommendations designed to beef up the government's response to P later this month to Cabinet. Cabinet has decided to consider decisions on pseudoephedrine regulation as part of this broader package. I expect to make announcements relating to this work and the advice of Professor Gluckman in October. I'll release Professor Gluckman's advice at that time. As most of you know, next week I'll leave for New York to attend the United Nations General Assembly opening week. I'll deliver an address to the General Assembly on Saturday, the 26th of September, New Zealand time, the day before local time in New York. I'll also be attending the opening of the UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon's Climate Change Summit and the UN General Assembly debate, as well as holding bilateral meetings with the Secretary General. I'll hold bilateral meetings with a number of leaders from other countries. Details of these are still being sorted out. In addition, I'll also meet UN Development Programme Administrator and former Prime Minister Helen Clark. Other events I'll be attending include the Clinton Global Initiative, which is an event where leaders, business people and others come together to discuss global challenges such as climate change and poverty. I'll also visit the New York Stock Exchange and speak to the Kiwi Expatriates Association, KIA. This is an important visit. New Zealand shares the desire of other countries, such as the United States, to see strong and effective United Nations. The opening week of the United Nations General Assembly provides a significant opportunity to connect with world leaders, discuss issues of importance to New Zealand, and generally promote this country's interests. I want to turn now to Auckland boundaries. Cabinet today made decisions on the boundaries for the new Auckland Council following consideration of recommendations in the report of the Auckland Governance Legislation Committee. Before I start, let me make this point. Wherever we set the boundaries, I think it's fair to say that there is a risk that someone will be unhappy. But Auckland does have to end somewhere, and I think we've struck a very good balance with the decisions we have made. Cabinet has agreed to maintain the southern boundary as recommended by the Select Committee. And we agreed to change the northern boundary to include the whole of the Rodney District in the new Auckland Council, as proposed by the Royal Commission. We believe this reflects the views of the majority of Rodney's district people, as well as the strongly held view of the Auckland Regional Council. Since people heard the Select Committee's proposal to split the Rodney District between the Auckland Council and Kaipara, we have heard from a large number of locals, and the majority view has been very clear. Don't split the Rodney District. We've listened and we've acted. We've put a lot of thought into the southern boundary, as there were arguments put forward for extending it right down to the Waikato River. The current Franklin District will be split under our chosen option, just south of Pukekohe, with the rest going into the Waikato. This makes sense because it means the entire Waikato River catchment area will be within the Waikato region. It avoids a lot of bureaucratic complexity and confusion that would have resulted from the boundaries proposed by the Royal Commission, and also avoids complicating arrangements for co-management of the Waikato River, which are subject to the Waikato-Tainui Treaty of Waitangi settlement process. The Local Government Commission will have some limited discretion in finalising the boundary, for example, to avoid splitting Waiuku in two. However, some people in other towns and areas close to the boundaries of the new Auckland Council may be concerned that the new boundaries will cut off their access to local government services and facilities. The government expects that the Local Government Commission will consider these impacts when finalising arrangements associated with the boundaries for the Auckland Council, and will consider transitional arrangements to avoid or minimise inconvenience to residents. I want to turn to the Remuneration Authority. Today, the Minister of Labour, Kate Wilkinson, issued a press statement about a bill which will be introduced to the House this week, and that requires the Remuneration Authority to take into account adverse economic conditions when setting MP salaries. As you all know, MPs are willing to forego a pay increase this year in the face of the current economic conditions. However, the Remuneration Authority said it could not take into account the recession in making its decisions. This bill allows the authority to balance wage rises against the economic conditions of the day. It seems sensible to let the authority act with greater flexibility when it's required. Changes will cover all professions the authority is responsible for. The Remuneration Authority Amendment Bill has been added to the order paper today. And finally, when the House resumes tomorrow, it will go into urgency after question time. On the order paper will be all the remaining stages of the Local Government Auckland Council Bill, the Student Loan Scheme Repayment Bonus Amendment Bill, the Taxation, International Taxation, Life Insurance and Remedial Matters Bill, and the remaining stages of the Immigration Bill.
Prime Minister, do you think there's any sort of movement towards capital gains tax? Are you still ruling this out?
Well, I've stated on numerous occasions I'm not a supporter of the capital gains tax. I don't think it's an efficient form of taxation. I don't think it achieves the objectives that some people state, which is to somehow stop a boom in the housing market. It didn't work that way in the United States, Australia or the UK that all have a capital gains tax. Now, it is true, the government has commissioned a working tax group to consider all aspects of tax policy, and of course one of those is likely to be a capital gains. But I would take an awful lot of convincing before I thought it was a good idea.
What about a land tax? Would be seen as different? Would you still consider
it? Well, I haven't seen enough details, and I know that's something, again, that occasionally is mooted in the media. I'd need to see the details of that and what implications were there.
What's your rank with this review, though? Do you expect to reduce
some taxes? The intention certainly is not to raise additional revenue. It's to ask the question about whether the current tax structure does provide the balanced growth that we want and the right incentives, and to make sure that we're competitive with Australia, which is the big market that we're largely integrated in.
So what would convince you of the capital gains tax? I mean, are you open to be convinced by this review or not?
Well, obviously I'm going to read the report like anybody else. But it's been my long-standing view that capital gains taxes are inefficient and they don't work. And unless there was some meteoric evidence coming out of that committee, I wouldn't be voting for one.
How about, beefing up existing clauses that are in there targeting property investment?
Yeah, well, there's all those sorts of things where the committee could consider wider implications around intent rules and the likes. Let's see what comes out of there. I mean, there may be some merit in those. I'm not going to rule those out, but a straight capital gains tax is not something I find terribly appealing.
Why is the super city legislation being pushed through under urgency?
The main reason is because the existing legislation requires a start date of 24 September, and without urgency, that's not possible. Secondly, the local government minister is travelling next week and isn't in the country. Something we've decided. And final analysis will take it through under urgency.
Well, how quickly are you going to move on the Remuneration Authority
building? Well, it would obviously have to go to a select committee, but it's going to be introduced into the House, I think, this week. It's on the order paper this week. Well, our preference would be, because we believe the Remuneration Authority should be taking into consideration those wider economic issues, and our experience in the past is that the legislation is so constraining that the Remuneration Authority is not doing that, and that was why we saw the Governor-General receive a pay increase that he ultimately had to work to return. The Remuneration Authority considers a number of entities, obviously MPs, clearly the Governor-General, but also judges.
Will that bill make it clear that the authority should play catch-up for, when you get into recovery, basically double the increase the following year to just make up for the...
Well, we'll need to see how it plays out through the select committee. At this stage, I don't think it has any provisions in that. It just simply says they have a wider mandate to be able to consider the broader economic conditions.
Why is it taking so long to get it built up? And I understand it's only about six clauses or six lines. And you were talking about this as long ago as March.
Yeah, well, the Labor Department's been considering this issue and working its way through it. We've also been considering whether a legislative change was required, and the final analysis we've decided is.
Okay.
Hasn't the horse bolted him? Hasn't the remuneration authority made some more determinations since then?
No. Not as far as I'm aware.
From keeping the northern Auckland boundary as it is, that's a significant backdown. How did you get it so wrong?
Well, the Cabinet worked on the advice of the Select Committee when it decided to move the northern boundary. Now, in the final analysis, as I said earlier, you'll never please everybody. It doesn't matter where the boundary is. But in the final analysis, we've decided that an all-in approach is what is the majority will of the people of Rodney. We've listened to them. There was an extensive meeting held on the weekend. We've had discussions with as many parties as we can. As I say, if these things are, there's pros and cons on both sides. But I think that we listened to the Select Committee. Clearly the Select Committee in the end didn't take a wide enough number of submissions to get a true flavour.
You've made it clear today the importance of keeping the cost to the households down through the ETS.
Yep.
Labour at the weekend, this conference, talked about taking some steps along the same lines but by restraining the dividends that the state generators. Do you think it's appropriate to reduce the return the government gets from those to keep the price down?
As general rule, no. For a number of reasons. I think firstly it's a bit rich of Labour to be talking about not taking dividends when you look, or reducing their dividend, when you look over the last 9 years when they were in government, they took $3.1 billion in dividends from state-owned power companies and the likes. They also had some tremendous opportunities where they had special one-off dividends, $800 million from Southern Hydro. They chose to take all of that. Secondly, I think there are real issues in terms of what they're talking about. One would be they'd be challenging the actual structure of an SOE, which is to act in a manner that is consistent with a commercial organisation. I don't know where that would leave them in relation to Contact, for instance, but in effect they would be talking about price fixing of a sort, and that may be, on the advice that we've had, in breach of the Commerce Act and potentially anti-competitive. So in our view, we also intend to hold the SOE's feet to the fire, so to speak, and expect them to deliver a greater level of performance to deliver the dividends that they are. Now, the only other point that I would make is that in the 7 months that, or 8 months I guess, that we've been in office, or well, 10 months we've been in office, but in the 7 months from November to 2009, electricity prices have risen 1.93%, largely because of the actions of the Minister and the review that he's undertaken, the very clear message that he and the SOE Minister has given to the SOE, the electricity SOEs. In the period from November 1999 to November 2008, the advice I've had is that retail electricity prices rose 67%. So in my view, Labor is saying one thing in opposition and did a completely different thing when they were in government.
How about the transmission? I mean, your comments cover the trading ones, but how about Transpower, which is the monopoly?
Well, it's not our intention to take a dividend from Transpower in any significant form over the next period of time, because they've got such a large investment program, it's going to be largely reinvested in their assets.
On the Auckland Super City legislation, has the government made any concessions to the Māori Party there in exchange for their support on the ETS?
No, and I don't know how they'll vote on the Auckland Super City legislation, but my expectations would be they'd vote against it.
Same question applying to the review of the Foreshore and Seabed Act?
No. The way the Māori Party considered their position in relation to the ETS was specific to the ETS legislation. And I think they'll make it quite clear it reflected the desires of and the feedback they got from iwi leaders. They have a desire, as we do, to balance both their economic interests with their environmental responsibilities. And I think they've worked that through. They've also effectively, because of the fixed $25 rate with a 50% reduction, got a carbon tax of sorts for the next 2.5-3 years. So I think, you know, in effect, they just sort of on a standalone basis.
Who have you got confirmed meetings with in New York next week?
I think it's going to be a full briefing tomorrow, so I'll probably just leave them there. But there's quite a wide range of leaders. I know it's across the board. I think it's the Dutch and the Australians, Ban Ki-moon, quite a number actually. They'll leave for tomorrow morning.
Is Lederman still on the...
At this point, it's still to be confirmed.
What about
Barack Obama? Well, certainly going to meet him. There's a cocktail party, I think, on the Tuesday or Wednesday night, so I'll have an opportunity to meet him there. Whether there'll be any other form of meeting with him or put aside in any form, I don't know. It's certainly going to be a very congested period for him, because he's only there, I guess, Tuesday and Wednesday. because the G20 is on, it's big on Thursday and Friday. So in a sense, while I'll obviously get an opportunity to shake hands with them, meet them face to face in a brief conversation, my bigger expectation is that we might have a little bit more time with APEC.
Have you been having talks with Terry Angeturia around increasing the tobacco tax, and was that a consideration of the ETS?
It wasn't a consideration of the ETS, and yes, in answer to your first question, they've raised it with us both in writing and orally on a number of occasions. It revolves around their genuine desire to see an increase in price to subdue the demand for people to take up smoking. Their real concern is that such a large percentage of the Māori population are smoking, and the health implications of that are obviously dire for their community. Government hasn't had an opportunity to consider that in any great length yet, but we're not rejecting their overtures out of hand.
Are you personally in favour of that idea?
I think if you want to reduce people's appetite to take up smoking, it seems to me that the academic evidence shows you that price is the most effective way of achieving that, and that is certainly one of the ambitions of the government.
The Prime Minister has suggested that you visit Fiji and meet with him, and that New Zealand Prime Minister can be reappointed. He said that it showed him to be willing to show the recognition of the government. What's your point?
Yeah, I find it interesting that he wants a High Commissioner in Fiji, given he booted the last two out. Maybe he should have thought about that before he took those actions against Michael Green and Caroline McDonald. But putting that to one side, look, we've always been happy to visit Fiji and to meet the leadership team if they can demonstrate to us that they intend to restore democracy in Fiji prior to 2014, and that's our continued position.
The head of lab tests has resigned this afternoon. He's been quite critical about their performance. Do you think that's enough to restore confidence?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. I mean, the Minister of Health's made it quite clear what the government's expectations are of lab tests. They have significant contractual obligations. The people of Auckland are relying on them. There's been a number of meetings over the weekend with DHBs and with lab tests. I mean, I believe that the issues that lab tests face in Auckland can be resolved. I don't think that they are so complex that a solution can't be found, but it's quite clear that the message that we've delivered to DHBs and they have in turn delivered to lab tests is pull up your socks and improve your performance.
There were reports in the media on the weekend that the SAS have been deployed to Afghanistan. Can you confirm that?
I can't, and my position on the SAS is the same as it was last week.
Have you talked with Peter Shercliffe about the MMP referendum since the election, or your staff?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
So your staff, you're not aware of your staff in conversation with him?
Not to the best of my knowledge.
Do you know whether you'll be voting to retain the current system yourself?
Look, I haven't even considered that yet. A bit of water to go under the bridge at this point. We're just considering how the referendum might work. I've made it quite clear that I think MMP is a system that is working reasonably effectively. It's not to say it's perfect, because I don't think it is. I'm not sure any electoral system is perfect. But let's work our way through. I tend to think whatever happens, New Zealand will either retain or adopt a proportional system of some sort. Thank you very much.